To the Black Entrepreneur Blueprint Show. I am your host, Jay Jones. Black Entrepreneur Blueprint was created specifically to educate and inspire Black entrepreneurs to launch, build, and grow successful businesses. Join us as we help build an economic power base in the Black community by promoting business ownership. If you are currently an entrepreneur or want to be an entrepreneur, we invite you to join us every week here at Black Entrepreneur Blueprint. Welcome to Black Entrepreneur Blueprint, session number one. I am your host, Jay Jones. Thank you for tuning in to our inaugural podcast. And since this is our first show, I want to give you an overview of what you can expect each week from Black Entrepreneur Blueprint. Our show is designed for Black entrepreneurs and would-be entrepreneurs to give you an insight into launching, building, and growing a successful business. Now, we do this by interviewing successful Black business owners and getting their personal stories of not just their successes, but also their failures and missteps along the way. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about myself. My name is Jay Jones, and I'm your host, and I am a serial entrepreneur. After college, I did the corporate thing for several years and then decided to go out on my own. I have owned over 11 businesses. Some were successful and some were not. I've owned a mortgage company, an alarm company, a marketing company, and several other business types. As I mentioned before, some were successful and some were not, so I speak from experience and not theory. I currently own a media company, a marketing company, and I do business coaching and also teaching. So I've been where you've been and I've done what you've done. So this show is actually for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. With that being said, our goal is to reach Black entrepreneurs and to help them build successful businesses. If you like the show, I ask that you please give it a 5-star review on iTunes and also spread the word to your friends, family, and your network. I also invite you to please visit our website at www.blackentrepreneurblueprint.com. That's www.blackentrepreneurblueprint.com, or you can go to www.beblueprint.com, www.beblueprint.com. On the website, you'll be able to see my latest articles, and you'll also be able to get our latest podcast. So please visit the website also. Without further ado, we're going to interview Dr. Dennis Kimbrough, world-renowned author, speaker, and educator. He is currently a professor at Clark University in Atlanta, and he's the author of the million-selling book, Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice, and his latest book is A Wealth Choice. Without further ado, Black Entrepreneur Blueprint welcomes Dr. Dennis Kimbrough. Dr. Kimbrough, I want to welcome you to the Black Entrepreneur Blueprint. How are you this afternoon?
I am doing well, and this is a tremendous honor. I'm just happy to be a part of the discussion. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. It is our honor, and I know this interview is going to be great for our Black Entrepreneur Blueprint listeners. Dr. Kimbrough, I gave you a little intro there, but why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, how you kind of got into what you're into now for people that don't know who you are.
Well, my black story was when I got my doctorate from Northwestern University, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but Jay, I certainly knew what I didn't want to do. And there I am, conferred with a PhD, and I didn't want to be like many of my colleagues, unlike you. I'm not saying that's a bad profession. I honor you. I didn't want to run to Wall Street and make a killing in the market like many of my colleagues did. I didn't want to go in the corporate route, though I did work in corporate America for a number of years. And ironically, Jay, I didn't even want to teach, and that's what I do now. But I wanted to find the answers to two questions. Question number one, why does one person fail while another succeeds, and why is one individual rich and wealthy while another is impoverished? So my dissertation at Northwestern, I looked at wealth and poverty among underdeveloped countries, and as soon as I was conferred with my degree, I told my wife, I said, you know, I have a shell of a book here. And she said, well, what would it take for you to formulate a book? And I said, well, I don't want to study poverty and I don't want to study nation states. What I want to do is just focus on wealth and those who created wealth. And she said, well, go ahead and get started. And I said, well, Pat, you don't understand. This is going to take face-to-face interviews and a few other things. It's going to take some type of financial resources, travel, per diem, all that. And she said, well, get started. Somehow, some way, the money will come. Well, during that process, the money never came until I finished what became my first book. But I carved out a list, Jay, of 50 individuals that happened to be African-American, men and women who not only climbed the back stairs to success, but they carved their name on a tablet of success. They didn't know me, but I certainly knew them. And I asked them questions about wealth creation, about success, and that initial list grew well past 150 interviews. Well, I wrote a book. A number of people heard what I was doing, and I had so many articles and interviews long before the book was even completed. And lo and behold, Success Magazine, Scott DeGarmo, who was the editor at the time, approached me about writing an article. I shared my manuscript with them because this was going to be the first self-help book for Black America. And he said, Dennis, we want you to write an article. And I said, no, Scott, here's the manuscript. Take anything you want. No, we like your writing style, this, that, and everything. So I wrote an article, and lo and behold, that article made to the desk of W. Clement Stone. Now, for your listeners out there who have no idea who W. Clement Stone was, in the 1970s, Jay, he was the Bill Gates of his time. He was one of the world's richest, and he was also the president of the Napoleon Hill Foundation. And again, for your listeners who have no idea who Napoleon Hill was, he was by far America's most prolific self-help writer. He wrote 16 books in his lifetime. His all-time bestseller, Think and Grow Rich, his first book, Laws of Success, written at the request and behest of Andrew Carnegie. Well, he, W. Clement Stone, got the article, read it, and unbeknownst to me, he called me up. I just returned home from interviewing Earl Graves, the publisher of Black Enterprise magazine. There was an answer on my a call on my answering machine. I hit the button, and it was W. Clement Stone. He said, young man, we heard about you. When can you come to Chicago? I would like to meet you. I returned his phone call. Less than 2 weeks later, me and my wife borrowed the money for airplane tickets and for housing, went up there, had no idea what he had in mind. When I walked into his palatial office, there he was, surrounded by his sea of lieutenants. I sat right across his desk, and he said to me, you're not the first person to go around this country interviewing successful African Americans. And I said, well, that's news to me. I don't know of any other books. He reached across the credenza, pulled out the last 100 written pages of Napoleon Hill, and I'm in my study in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm looking at those 100 pages now. They're right on my desk, and dropped it in my lap. He said, I have a proposition for you. And I said, what is that, Mr. Stone? We want you to complete, finish, and update a book. And I said, what book? And he says, the book that's in your lap right now. And my initial response was, sir, I'm honored, humbled, but I can't do that. He said, why not? And I said, well, I'm writing a book of my own. And he said, if you have any sense, you'll push your book aside and finish this. Well, 4 months later, I guess I came out of consciousness. I came to consciousness. I pushed my book aside, which was What Makes the Great Great. That was the book that I was working on at the time. That was going to be my first book. It turned out to be my third book because Think and Grow Rich, a Black Choice, the book that I finished with the Napoleon Hill Foundation, became my first book, close to 1 million copies in print.
Powerful.
Yeah, beyond powerful. November 4th, 1986, my life changed forever.
Dr. Kimbrough, for those who are listening who don't know who W. Clement Stone is, can you just expound on that a little bit further?
He was the president and CEO of Combined Life Insurance, was now Aon, A-O-N, life insurance company. He was one of the world's wealthiest. And he stumbled upon Think and Grow Rich like so many other people. And he called up Napoleon Hill. He brought Napoleon Hill in to speak to his sales force. And he said, you know, what you extrapolate in this book needs to go beyond my sales force. And he says, I want to manage you and I want to put you out on the road because this book needs to be read by millions. And Napoleon Hill thought about it. He said, okay, you can manage me. And he told W. Clement Stone, told Napoleon Hill at the time, anybody that I go in business with must be a millionaire. Now, Napoleon Hill had at the time, he had made two fortunes in his life and lost both of them. And he said, listen, I'm going to take you, I'm going to put you back on tour. You're going to do, I'm going to send you to different nations, different towns, and you're going to hold conferences and seminars and workshops. And in no time, you will earn your millions again. And that's what happened. But here's the information. You know, everything happens to you twice in life, Jay. The inner, the outer, the thought, the thing, the mental versus the physical. And we're not in this world to set it right, but you are in this world to see it rightly. And no one is poor because someone's rich. I'm not poor because you're rich and you have money. No, those individuals who claim that they are poor, they're poor because they never learned to lead with love. Now, Dr. Kimber, what in the world are you talking about leading with love? Well, what do you love to do? What is your passion for? I didn't choose to be here, and you didn't choose to be here. The bottom line, damn it, you were chosen. And what are you chosen? What is our number one task in life? Our number one task in life is to represent He who sent us. And everybody is on a mission. So what is the mission that beats on your chest? What is the goal? What is the vision that you hold in your mind? What do you love to do? What do you have a passion for? What is your calling? A career is what you paid for, but a calling is what you're made for. And what are the two greatest days of your life? The two greatest days of your life, number one, the day you were born, and number two, the day you know why. And people say to me, oh, man, Dr. Kimber, I read your books and they changed my life. My books didn't do nothing. My books, what they did is help you change your habits. And if you change your habits, then you changed your life. There is no word in the Bible mentioned more than forgiveness. Now, that doesn't mean, oh, when no one was looking at the cookie. Forgive me for my silly thinking. Forgive me for the errors in my ways. You see, when you wake up in the morning, Jay, that's the same sun that Adam walked under. That's the same sun that the master walked under. That's the same sun that Harriet Tubman walked under. And what in the world do we know about Harriet Tubman? Well, over the course of her life, she freed 960 slaves. And during the latter part of her life, a young journalist approached her and said, Ms. Tubman, I want to chronicle what you've done. As a matter of fact, I want to write a book on you. And what was her response, Jay? Her response was, please, I don't need none of that. I don't need praise, and I don't need adulation. I haven't done anything. I freed 1,000 slaves, but I could have freed thousands more had they only known they were slaves. Yeah, the Lord loves poor people. But look, damn it, He showed you a way not to be. And that poverty that you boast about, and that poverty that you hold on to, it's only one place, and it's in your mind. So what do we got to do? We got to repent. And what is repent? Change your thinking. Like I said, you change your thinking, you'll change your life.
Well, that was powerful in and of itself. Dr. Kimber, I wanted to ask you, most of my listeners, the majority of them are entrepreneurs or wantrepreneurs,
mm-hmm.
in the process and or thinking about becoming entrepreneurs. And one of the questions that I always ask is, can you tell us about a time, you kind of touched on it, that you were down, that you were on your back and you had to look up. A lot of times we hear stories of entrepreneurs and all we hear is the success portion, but we miss the struggle. Can you tell us in detail what was one of your biggest struggles that you had to overcome?
Oh, I mean, there were a number of them. And again, it was all mental. It was all mental. I mean, where do ideas come from? An idea comes from your creator knocking on your subconscious, asking you, do you want more out of life? Now, there's nothing precocious about your creator. He wouldn't give you the idea to create wealth. He wouldn't give you the idea to go ahead and get the life of your dreams and then put obstacles in your way. But to answer your question, there were so many of them. I mean, I can't begin to sit here and tell you the times my gas, lights, water, and electricity was cut off. I mean, Jay, I didn't lose one car in the process. I lost two. I mean, there were so many times, and I'll never forget the second time they cut my water off. And when they cut it off a second time, they apply a surcharge. And I forget, the surcharge was $65. I didn't have the money to pay the water bill. And I lied. I looked my oldest daughter, I looked her in the eye and I lied to her. She came home from school and she got the faucet on and nothing came out. And she said, Dad, what's wrong with the water? And I knew what was wrong with the water. I didn't pay the water bill.
Right.
And I said, oh, they're probably working on the pipes outside. Well, they weren't working on the pipes. Dad dropped the ball. He couldn't pay the water bill. And so, you know, my wife said, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm going to go down to the water company and explain. I don't know. All I got to do is tell them the truth. And I went down there, and they had three different clerks down there, you know, taking, handling of the water bills and payments like that. And there was a young lady who happened to be African-American, and I said, I'm going to bare my soul to her. And you go in there, and you take a number and get in line. Well, I got in line, and sure enough, she called me in, and I got down on one knee in her office. And I said, you don't know me, and I don't know you, and I know that I owe you money, and my bill is in arrears, but I'm writing a book, and I don't know if anybody's going to read it, but I think it might do well, and I might help people out, and I might earn an income, and I'll find somehow some way to pay you if you just help me, blah, blah, blah. And Jay, she had glass partitions. You could see all of the clerks right there, and she looked to her left, and she looked to her right, and she hit a few keys on that keyboard, and she erased my account altogether.
Wow.
And, wow. And what were the last words she said to me? She said, I won't tell if you won't. Now pick up your bed and go walk.
Wow. That's nothing but God right there.
Pick up your bed and go walk. Why dost thou criest unto me? Did not perform. Listen, damn it. Quit talking about the size of your problems and talk about the size of your God. I mean, they all go through it. I remember I asked Damon John, if this story's in the wealth chart. I said, Damon, what was the high water mark in your life? What was the defining moment? And he said to me, when I had to burn the furniture, I said, translate, what do you mean burn the furniture? He said, when I finally got financing from Samsung to go ahead and start my apparel line, I hired all these seamstresses, and they showed up at my mother's house with all their equipment and sewing machines, and I had no place to put them or their equipment. So I took all the furniture out of my mother's house, put it in the backyard, and set it on fire.
That's commitment.
I asked Tyler Perry. I said, Tyler, how in the world did you go from sleeping in your car in New Orleans and sleeping in your car in Atlanta, Georgia, to building a $145 million production studio? He said, nothing but the grace of God. And there I am with Bishop T.D. Jakes. And I said, Bishop, they said you would never make it in the ministry. They ran you out of Charleston, West Virginia with only 8 members. You're a high school dropout. I mean, but now here you got a, you know, $45 million mega ministry, 191,000 square foot mega church. And he said to me, well, my critics aren't altogether wrong. But I don't care if I had to spit. I don't care if I had to stutter. I don't care if I had to stammer. I had something to say, and I was going to say it. And I said, well, I'm here taking notes with both hands for my latest book. You got an open mic. Tell me how to create prosperity. He said, give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. Teach him how to fish, feed him for a lifetime. But show him how he can buy the pond, and no one in his family will ever know struggle. We are on this earth. You know, if you knew, Jay, if you knew who walks beside you every day on this journey called life, you would never doubt or fear again. You're in the process of learning how to buy the pond. Now, my business students at Clark Atlanta, they come up to me all the time and say, oh, man, Dr. Kimbrough, look at my business plan. I'm going to make a killing. Or, Dr. Kimbrough, I just got an offer from this accounting company. I'm going to be bank like Hank. I'm going to make $80,000 a year, man. I'm 21 years old, blah, blah. And I said, whoa, pump the brakes, baby. Pump the brakes. Slow your roll. I said, money is not the bottom line. They said, what do you mean, Dr. Kimbrough? I said, love is the bottom line. They said, what do you mean? I said, well, if you love your job, you're going to make manager in no time. I said, if you love your coworkers, you're going to make it up the corporate ladder. I said, you know, if you love your customers, you're going to be given more customers. So when you go on that job interview, I mean, your goal is not to get, your goal is not to get the job. Your goal is to do your job. And what is to do your job? Well, how are you going to do your job? To glorify your Father in heaven. Like I said, to represent he who sent you. Do it with a flair. Commit yourself to excellence. Do you even know your area of excellence? Because when you're the best at what you do, Jay Jones, you never have to worry about income and you never have to worry about employment. The marketplace will seek you out.
Amen. Amen to that. And you, Dr. Kimbrough, you mentioned some stressful situations with your water and things of that nature and losing cars. Now, I know you're married. And one of the things when I hold my workshops and seminars, I also invite spouses to come because as an entrepreneur, we do take risks. And what I've learned personally and from consulting with other entrepreneurs is that many times when the spouses are not on the same, they're not saying as risk tolerant as each other, you find a lot of problems and marriages fail. Obviously, as you know, money is the number one cause of marriage failure. So how did you or how did your wife handle that situation and similar situations that you had as you were working your way up the ladder in terms of your book and your entrepreneurship?
Well, I beg to differ. I'm going to answer your question. Number one cause of marriage failure is love. I mean, I tell people all the time that this, I'm looking at my wedding band right now. This ring has been on this finger for 42 years. So many times people will make the mistake of marrying someone that they can live with. Look, damn it, you don't marry somebody that you can live with. You marry the individual you can't live without. And I just can't live without her. So the problem is, all right, so we don't have water in the house, so we don't have a car, but I still have her. Now, there were times in the seven-year ordeal that my wife quit and I didn't. There were times that I quit and she didn't. But I thank God we didn't quit together.
Right.
And that is the difference. Now, what I have seen from my focus groups with black millionaires, and this is something men that we have got to take care of, when the dream bearer is a man, so many times in the wealth choice, and I had six focus groups around the country. If you weren't seven figures and you were an African American, you didn't get in the focus group. When the dream bearer is the husband, that wife, that spouse will stick with that man through hell and high water. Unfortunately, what I've seen, when the dream bearer is the female, that husband will stick with that wife until the first bump in the road. We have got to change that. Now, what is the greatest psychic need of a man, Jay Jones? The greatest psychic need of a man is to know that his thoughts and feelings are felt. What is the greatest psychic, you know, need of a woman? The greatest psychic need of a woman is to be safe and secure. And that's also the greatest psychic need of children. See, men, as men, Jay Jones, our number one job is to make women and children feel safe. Now, my wife can go ahead and travel. I remember when all three of my daughters are grown, college educated, married, they got their own homes, building their own families and everything, I'm blessed. But I remember years ago when all the girls were here, my wife could go ahead and travel and she can come home. And when she would come home after being absent a day or two, a week, whatever, I'd say, oh, mom's home. But let me come home after going on the road for 24 hours. And what did my daughter say? Daddy's home. Daddy's home. Oh, my goodness. Daddy's home. Why? They feel safe and they feel secure. Mm-hmm. That's our role as men. And it only takes a few good brothers, Jay. I mean, the new civil rights today is wealth creation and restoration of the black male. That's the new civil rights struggle. And unfortunately, there's so many leaders out there that don't understand that. And that's not me. That's Andy Young. I mean, here's the guy who walked arm in arm, side by side, hand in hand with Martin Luther King. And when he told me, you know, the Montgomery bus boycott really wasn't about sitting in the front of the bus. When he told me that, I said, brother, you got black leaders out here who still thinks it's about sitting in front of the bus. I said, Mr. Ambassador, that's one email, that's one memo that my race had never received. And he told me, he said, you know, me and Martin Luther King, we integrated the lunch counter, but we failed to integrate the dollar. And I said, Mr. Ambassador, how do you integrate the dollar? He said, somebody's got to give us the traits, the keys, the qualities, the attributes of how to compete effectively in a capitalistic economy.
Hmm.
And, you have it right now. I mean, I can't do more than what I've done. between thinking for Richard by choice, between what makes a great great, and between the wealth choice. Here it is. I'm out of breath. I'm out of gas. I can't do anymore. This is it. But this is what Andy Young said. Yeah, this is it. This is it. This is my life right here. Take it and run with it. Because your two most prolific scholars, I mean, you got W.B. Du Bois on one hand. And what did he say? He said two things. He said, number one, the man or woman who won't control his or her finances won't control anything else. And then number two, he said, nothing positive will ever occur in a community that fails to circulate its dollars. So we're guilty of those two things. And then you have Carter G. Woodson in The Miseducation of the Negro. And what did he say? He said the greatest strategy is that we've been taught to consume and not to develop.
That is correct. That is correct.
So your two most prolific scholars put your job on the table, what you got to do.
Yeah, that's powerful. And one of the things that we definitely need to start doing is the circulation of the dollar. And I was just explaining to my youngest daughter about 2 weeks ago. We had gone into Chinatown in Philadelphia, and we were just talking about restaurants, and then we drove to North Philadelphia, part of North Philadelphia, and I said, look at all the businesses here. I said, most of them predominantly, it looked like at least 90% beside the barbershops,
yeah,
were owned by other ethnicities.
Yeah.
And I said, now you won't see a soul food restaurant in Chinatown.
Oh, you sure won't. You sure won't.
And she said, Dad, why not? I said, because they control their own community.
Oh, yeah.
They'll come
and rightfully so.
And you know what? That's exactly what I told her. I said, you know, when you own the economic power base, I said, for example, I said, Erica, with my business, I said, I hire who I want to hire.
Yeah.
I said, now, and it's just like somebody who owns a Chinese restaurant. They hire who they want to hire and who,
yeah,
they're comfortable.
Yeah.
And I can't knock that.
Nope.
So I said, it's all about economic power and start being able to circulate the dollar. And she was like, Dad, I never thought of it. And then I even went a step further and I explained to her. I said, do you know what a vertical is? And she was like, no, Dad, I'm not sure what a vertical is. And I said, well, I guarantee you, I said, that Chinese restaurant, I said, if they're using chopsticks, they're buying it from a Chinese manufacturer.
Yeah.
The rice that they're buying it from a Chinese manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
I said, so that money is going from one Asian family to another, to,
yeah,
another, to another.
Yep.
And that dollar is circulating. I said, now the first thing we do on Friday when we get paid is most of us go run to the mall.
Yeah.
And we're spending our money and it goes,
yep,
out of the community.
Yep.
And without an economic base, we're nowhere. And I,
yeah,
I totally agree with you in that respect. I had a request from a good friend of mine who has a business. He's struggling right now. And he and his wife they don't see eye to eye right now. And my question to you is, if you could, and good brother, he's working hard. Things just haven't kicked off for him yet. If you could talk to his wife and say something to her to encourage her, what would you say?
I tell her to stand in the light. I tell both of them to stand in the light. I mean, there's only one way to create health. You know, there's only one way to overcome disease. And what is that? To cultivate a consciousness of health. An apple a day, walk around the block. There's only one way to, you know, overcome poverty, and that's to cultivate a consciousness of wealth. So, like I said, we're not here to set it right. We're here to see it right. Only two things are going to happen when you stand into the light. Number one, you're going to find God, and number two, you're going to raise your standard of living.
I will make sure.
When you stand in the light, you'll understand all the things that are right, all the things that are going well, all the things. This is small. This is just a little. Hey, this is a glitch. The reason why you're poor because you don't have a strategy to overcome your poverty.
Right.
The reason why you're uneducated, you don't have a strategy to become educated. And what are the four elements of strategy? The four elements of strategy. Number one, what's the worst that can happen? Number two, what's the best that can happen? Number three, what's likely to happen? But number four, are you willing to tolerate the worst in order to achieve the best? And that's why it took me 7 years. I was willing to tolerate the worst. You see, what people don't understand, they think, okay, man, here's probably the best anecdote and metaphor that I could use, Jay. And I know we're running up against the clock because you said 30 minutes. But what is the difference between the wealth creator and the entrepreneur and that individual who gets a business and then loses it and goes back into corporate? Okay, you have two individuals. Okay, number one, here is a guy. He worked in corporate America for 5 years. After 5 years, he's passed off for a promotion. He, says, I'm going to start a business. He goes out and starts a business. And after 6 months, no one is using his product. No one is using his service. He's about to lose his car. He's about to lose his house. He's behind on his mortgage. And instead of losing his car and his mortgage, he blows the dust off his resume and he jumps back into corporate America. Then you have another individual. He works 5 years in corporate America. He gets tired of it, and he starts a business. And after 6 months, no one is using his product. No one is using his service. He's about to lose his house. He's behind on his mortgage, and he's about to lose his car. But instead of blowing the dust off of his resume, he fears losing his life more than losing that house or car. He says, come take the house. Come take the car. There is no way in the world I can work on that job. Now, both of them fear, both of them are overcome with fear. One guy fears losing his house or car. The other one fears losing his life. That's the difference.
Yeah, that was an extraordinary answer to that question, because you're so right. When I consult a lot of and do workshops and seminars, I see so many entrepreneurs that end up quitting and going back to corporate, but they continue to go through a vicious cycle. So they're working corporate for a couple years. That entrepreneurial angst will hit them again. They'll come back out. They'll fail again. They'll go back into corporate. And finally, you have to make a stand. And
yeah,
you're right. Are you willing, to tolerate the worst? And
yeah,
you know what? If you're willing to do that, then there is no question about what you should do.
And that's Michael Porter's strategy at Harvard B School. That's competitive advantage. You see,
okay.
I interviewed Ed Lewis and Clarence Smith, the founders of Essence Magazine. And Jay, there were six individuals. Go get What Makes the Great Great. I tell their story there were six individuals who were going to develop a magazine, first magazine strictly and solely for black women, 1969, 1970. But when it came time to quit those cushy corporate jobs and chase the dream, only two out of the six could do it: Ed Lewis and Clarence Smith. And therein lies the difference. So I tell that husband, stand into the light. Talk about your dreams. Talk about your vision. Wealth is not what you have, Jay Jones. Wealth is what you look forward to.
And that kind of parlays into my next question. I had. Do you have about 15 more minutes, Dr.?
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Okay, great. Many people have great ideas that they never put into action. What is one actionable thing that you could recommend to my listeners today to get them on their path to their truth, so to speak?
Well, number one, focus on your dream and vision. See with your mind's eye, because your physical eye will lie to you. See with your mind's eye, because your physical eye will lie to you. I mean, if we stood here, I am in Atlanta, Georgia. Let's go to Savannah, Georgia, and let's look out over the Atlantic Ocean. And you might say to me, gee, Doc, it looks like the sky and the water meet. Well, the sky and the water never meet, because there'd be no such thing as gravity. If you and I, Jay, stood on railroad tracks, you would say, damn, looks like the train tracks are coming together. But we know that the train tracks will never come together, because the train will fall off the tracks. Now, those are two examples where your physical eye lies to you. So see with your mind's eye. Again, and we've seen so many different examples of it. I mean, who is the most pitiful individual in the room? Any man or woman with sight but no vision. Who is the most dangerous individual in the room? That man or woman without hope. I mean, all you've got to do is look at Kodak. In 1998, Kodak invents the digital camera. But here in 2012, Kodak, Rochester, New York, 140,000 employees, goes bankrupt. got a market cap of more than $20 billion, goes bankrupt. They invented the digital camera, but they go bankrupt. The same year that Kodak goes bankrupt, 2012, 13 committed souls in California take the same product and come up with Instagram. That's the difference between sight and vision.
I did not know that. I knew Kodak went bankrupt. I didn't know that Instagram people came from Kodak. Wow. Took that same concept. My goodness.
I mean, the greatest gift that we've ever been given is the ability to change our mind. And what is the greatest competitive advantage, Jay? The greatest competitive advantage is a passionate, committed mind. A passionate, committed mind can't be defeated. And that's not me. That's Albert Einstein. Albert Einstein said, nothing positive will ever occur from an undisciplined mind. What did Martin Luther King say? Martin Luther King said, your life is officially over the day you begin to focus on and talk about all the things that don't matter. NBA wives, Atlanta housewives, Instagram, everything that doesn't matter.
Right. Well, now that you do bring that up, what do you think the effect of the media today is having on, since you mentioned the Atlanta housewives, is having on our community?
Well, it's what we allow it to have. I mean, hey, no one watches more TV than African-Americans. That's not me. That's the Nielsen report. The average African-American watches 75, 76 hours of TV a week. Now, what do they do during that 75-70? They know your hot button. I mean, they know your hot button, and your hot button is recognition. Look at me. And everything about, those 75, 76 hours of TV is programming you. And that's why, and I'm not talking about narcissists. Listen, you do what you want to do. You want to watch TV. No one goes to the movies more than African-Americans. So you want to do that, go ahead and do it. But at least understand what's going on in your life. And what's the bottom line? Every year, $1 trillion goes through your hands, Black America, without nothing to show for it.
That's right.
Well, they're making you consumers. I mean, we are only 12% of the population, but we consume. I mean, look at our consumption patterns. We buy 33 to 35% of all salt, toothpaste, pasta, household detergents. Black males are only 6% of the population. We buy more than 20% of all Nike shoes. Black females are 6% of the population, and black females buy 27% of all shoes and cologne manufactured in the United States. So every year, okay, we're saying, hey, Black America's poor. We don't have this. We don't have that. Again, going back to the wealth choice, why dost thou criest unto me? I gave you $1 trillion. And that's not me. Go read Maggie Anderson's book, A Year in the Black. And you were the one that brought up consumption patterns. I mean, the average dollar in the Jewish community stays there for 19 days. The average dollar in the Asian community stays there for 24 days. The average dollar in the East Indian community stays there for 45 days, a month and a half. But the average dollar stays in the Black community for 6 hours. We are the only ethnic group that if we get paid on Friday, we won't wait till Monday to go to the bank and cash that check. We'll go to the bank on Saturday before 12 noon. We are the only ethnic group that will do that.
Or the check cashing location.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If not
and,
the bank.
Yeah. And Mississippi is the blackest state in the nation, more than 34% African-American. And you have more check cashing facilities in the state of Mississippi than you have McDonald's restaurants.
That's sad.
But again, you have the power to change that. You can change your mind. And this is all about raising consciousness. I mean, Jesus, you've been absent for 3 days. You had people worried. Where have you been, man? You've been missing. People out looking for you. What was his response? What? I had you worried? Should have known that about my father's business. Well, what is your father's business, Jay Jones? Your father's business is raising consciousness. Your father's business is growing, developing. There are keys to success. And what is the key to success? Growth and development. If you don't read, if you don't study, if you don't grow, if you don't develop, if you don't go to the seminars, if you don't go to conferences, if you don't network, if you don't take in the information, somebody out in the universe will. The day you meet that other person, you lose. And as a race, we're losing because somebody else is taking the information. Asians are taking in the information. East Indians are taking in the information. And you know what? Africans are now taking the information because the Census Bureau is predicting 10 to 12 years from today, the fastest and largest growing black middle class will no longer be in the United States, it'll be in Africa. You only got six black billionaires in the United States. You got 16 in Africa.
Yeah, I happened to read that not too long ago. Dr. Kimbrough, what in terms of my listeners who are thinking about starting a business, and I'm pretty sure I kind of know what you're going to say. There are two schools of thought that seem to be more prevalent out there now. One is follow your passion, and the other seems to be to find a problem and solve that problem.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's all a bite of the same apple.
Yeah.
You know, what are your strengths? What is your area of excellence? Or find a need and fill it. You know, or don't give people what they need, give them what they want. But whatever drives you, whatever's the motivating factor, you got to realize that there are five phases that all entrepreneurs go through. And let's be clear. Yeah, and let's be clear, Jay. Just because you own a mom and pop hamburger stand doesn't make you an entrepreneur. But if you own a Burger King, if you own a Wendy's, if you own a Five Guys, if you own a McDonald's, you're definitely going to be an entrepreneur because they're going to make sure that you go through the five phases. The first phase is called new venture creation. And what is new venture creation? Some of your listeners right now are probably in the first phase. That's when you have the idea for a business, and I don't care what you're doing. I mean, you could be working in corporate America right now, and you know, hey, I'm eventually get out of here and start my own business. So you're in first phase right now. You are an entrepreneur. Well, you're punching that clock. You know it's just going to be a matter of time. This is the idea that I have. I'm going ahead, taking notes. I'm scouting out potential areas for, you know, my business, for my headquarters, and everything. So number one, it's called new venture creation. Phase number two is called startup. And startup, that's when you got skin in the game. That's when you go ahead and get the location. That's when you cut, you know, that's when you contact the electric company, cut the lights on. That's when you got a facility. That's when you go, hey, listen, I've written my business plan. I flipped the light switch. I'm open for business. Phase number three is called the managerial phase. And this is the number one roadblock for most entrepreneurs, not capital. People say, oh, man, I didn't have the capital. I went, uh-uh. You couldn't make the transition from entrepreneur to manager. And what is management? Planning, organization, and control. Teachers teach, writers write, painters paint, and managers, what the managers do. Well, damn it, they manage. Mm-hmm. And there I am interviewing Lisa Price, Carol's daughter. She struggled with the third phase, and she told me that. She said she lost so much money, she lost so many employees, and she lost so much goodwill. Because she didn't know how to treat her employees.
Okay, that's number
three. Can you make the shift from entrepreneur to manager? Number four, you got to make the shift from manager to leader. And that leader, hey, you and your wife can go to Bahamas for 2 months, and when you come back, because you develop the leadership capabilities in your team, you're still purring along and you're still growing. And what do we know about leaders? You know, what are the key constructs of leaders? Number one, do I set vision? Do I set direction and cast vision well? Number two, do I cultivate a culture of growth? Number three, do I develop others? Number four, do I engage and develop and build consensus with others? Number five, do I lead well in a crisis? Number six, do I recreate myself and my organization when needed? Number seven, do I make things happen? That's leadership, my brother.
Okay.
And then number five is mergers and acquisitions or exit strategy. Now, I had a young student came to me and said, Dr. Kimbrough, I want you to look over my business plan. It wasn't even a business plan. And I said, what business are you in? He said, I'm starting my own record label. And he thought he had a business plan. It was about 10 pages. And I just flipped it. I was playing devil's advocate with him. He wasn't one of my students. He was just another student. He heard about me on campus. And I'm looking at these 10 pages, and I said to him, I said, your marketing strategy is pretty loose and pretty weak. I said, what are you forecasting in terms of market share? And he said, market share? I said, yeah, what market share are you going after? He said, about 5 to 7%. I said, okay. Then I turned to the last page and I said, well, what is your exit strategy? He said, what do you mean? I said, what are you going to sell your company for? He said, no, I'm not going to sell the company. I said, wait. You're saying that your marketing strategy calls for 5 to 7% and you're not going to sell your company. I said, wait a minute. I said, do you think that Puffy, do you think that Jay-Z, and do you think that, you know, and all these record labels are going to give up 5 to 7% of their business to you and not come after you?
That's right.
Three times, Phil Knight asked Oakley Sunglasses to sell him the product. He asked Oakley once, and Oakley says it's not for sale. He said, I'm asking you a second time, write any dollar figure you want. I want to get into the sunglass market. Oakley said, well, what did I tell you the first time? So, not for sale. He said, all right, this is the third and last time I'm going to ask you. Give me a dollar figure. Oakley says, I'm sorry, it's not for sale. Phil Knight says, I am officially your competitor. Now, at one time, Jay, at one time, whether it's high school, college, or pro football, on those helmets, that shield that they had the Oakley symbol. It's got Nike now.
That's right. You know what? I didn't realize that. Now that you mention it, yeah. I'm just picturing the helmets now. Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
At one time, professional golfers, those sunglasses they wore, they were Oakley's. They were Nike now.
Mm.
So what am I saying? Sometimes it's risky not to take a risk.
That's right. You're exactly right on that.
My brother, we have got to continue this conversation. Tell all your listeners to go get The Wealth Choice because that book is starting a revolution. No one wants to look foolish.
Well,
it is time to make your money grow.
Well, I did want to ask you real quickly. I know I'm not going to hold you.
Yeah, no problem.
In The Wealth Choice, and that's what I wanted to touch on before we close out. You talk about the different – I'm looking at the chapter right now, the actual table of contents here. And what are the actual secrets, the laws? I know there's 7 laws, correct?
Oh, yeah. What I found are 7 best practices, 7 competencies that these black millionaires adhere to. And over a 7-year period, I interacted with about 1,000 black millionaires. You only got 35,000 in the United States. Through my survey, number one, number two, the focus groups, the 6 focus groups that I had, and number three, the face-to-face and phone interviews that I had with these folks. And over a 7-year period, I know that I rubbed shoulders with 1,000, which is a representative sample. So those are the 7 best practices and 7 competencies that if they don't adhere to on a daily basis, they certainly do on a weekly or monthly basis.
Can you list those real quick for
Oh, audience? Yeah, real easy. Number one is knowledge. You know, prosperity begins in the mind and ends in the purse. Number two, make a decision that you won't be poor. Like I said, the greatest gift you have, the ability to change your mind. Number three, believe in yourself when no one else will. Number four, know your unique gifts, your purpose. Find your talents and strengths. Number five, how may I serve thee? Service is the price you pay for the space that you occupy. And I don't care whether you're on a street corner with a cardboard sign saying, I work for food. You got just as much opportunity as Oprah Winfrey or Bill Gates. People say, Dr. Kimbrough, how in the world are you going to say that? Why? Because anybody can serve Jay Jones. See, anybody can wow the customer. Anybody can do more than what is expected, more than what is required. Anybody, and listen to me, damn it, anybody can be the most positive person in the room. Anybody can adhere to the first law of marketing. What's the number one rule of marketing? Make the eyeballs move.
Mm-hmm.
The easiest way for you to get in the business, and I don't care whether it's mundane, janitorial, or you want to have a lemonade stand, wow the customer service. Blow their socks off. What service? And anybody can do that. Number 6, thou shalt be in business for thyself. Like I said, the 2 most important words today are own it. And number 7, make thy money grow.
That's right. Amen. Amen to all 7 of those, Doc.
Mm-hmm.
That is great. And Doc, I want to close out the show. I want to once again thank you for taking the time to educate and inform our audience. And I want to let you get a plug. I know you have the Wealth Choice. Tell people how they can get the book. And
you can go online to Amazon or Barnes and Noble. Okay. My website, www.denniskimbrough.com. Twitter, okay. Dr. Dennis Kimbrough. I'm on LinkedIn. So go ahead and hit me up and let's start a revolution, because never forget, Jay Jones, the truth shall set you free.
That's right.
Free
That's
from right. Free from what, Jay? Free from the thought that you need or lack anything. Booker T. Washington said it years ago. And Booker T. Washington's book was the first self-help book for Black America, Up From Slavery. He was the first African-American to make the cover of Success Magazine. And what did he say? Start where you are with what you have, knowing that what you have is plenty enough.
That's it. You preach tonight, Doc.
No, just sharing information, man. Just sharing information.
Preach tonight. I have one quick question for you that I always ask my guests, just to get a little personal side to you. Tell us something about yourself that most people do not know. I'll give you an example. I interviewed a successful entrepreneur. Guy was about 6'5", 290, close to 300 pounds. And he said the thing that nobody knew about him was he used to take ballet. He was an excellent practitioner of ballet, and he took ballet for over 7 years. And he said he loved it. But nobody would – if you saw the guy, you wouldn't think he could spell ballet. But tell us something about yourself that most people don't know, if you don't mind.
People ask me all the time – well, I shouldn't say all the time, but they ask me how I got into blah, 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 this field, what attracted me. And what they may not know, my father, my parents were sticklers on education. My mother, she barely had a seventh grade education. But they were sticklers on education. Me and my older brother couldn't go outside and play till we did our homework. There was absolutely no watching TV on school nights. But there was this show that came on for a half hour, one day a week, and my father made me and my oldest brother watch it. And after we watched it, my father would quiz us. And what was that show? It was Biography with Mike Wallace.
Wow. Okay, that's something we didn't know.
Yeah, and back then, Jay, there were no Black profiles. I mean, back then I was watching profiles, Muhammad K. Gandhi, Winston Churchill, Eleanor Roosevelt, Babe Ruth. Came on for one day a week for 30 minutes, and after the show, my father said, okay, what did you learn? Tell me about them. You think you could do that? What were some of the obstacles? I mean, what are they doing? Blah, blah, blah. Wouldn't you like to meet that individual? Yes, sir. Every week, me and my brother were sitting in front of that TV with our little legs crossed, watching profiles of folks that we never knew.
And that's important, and what that instilled in you and what that has manifested into. And that's so important about – we could go on another topic about the family, but that's so important to have that nuclear family there and the support, the guidance, and the direction, and most of all the love that can change anything. And Doc, with that, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm going to be doing a conference, a wealth conference, Black Wealth Conference, in the fall, later probably in November. I'm going to reach out to you to see if your schedule isn't busy. We'd love to have you come and present, and I will definitely be in touch with you. And is there anything else you want to say to our listeners?
No, I'm fine. Like I said, Jay, hey, thanks for having me. You could have selected 50 million different people. You selected me. God bless. I'm humbled and I'm honored. Call anytime, my brother. Take care.
Thank you so much, Doc. You have a great evening.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. That was an amazing interview with Dr. Dennis Kimbrough, and we once again thank him for coming on Black Entrepreneur Blueprint. I also want you to know that you can get a copy of your show notes on our website, www.blackentrepreneurblueprint.com. You'll have show notes and links to Dr. Kimbrough's website. Also, please remember to give us a 5-star review in iTunes. We want to spread the word, and we want to have this site and this podcast grow like wildfire. And if you need to contact me for any reason, please feel free to contact me via email at jjones@blackentrepreneurblueprint.com. That's jjones@blackentrepreneurblueprint.com. That's jayjones@blackentrepreneurblueprint.com. Also, I want you to sign up for our free ebook that I produced called The Entrepreneur Blueprint for Success, 12 Keys to Building a Successful Business. Go on to the website, and it'll be a box on the top right-hand corner. Sign up for a free ebook. It's very informative, a short read, but it's an excellent read for you entrepreneurs. Once again, thanks again, and I will see you next week at BlackEntrepreneurBlueprint.com.